Well, Michael Slater called it the elephant in the room. What the hell are they going to do with Australian cricket captain Michael Clarke? We'll soon know soon enough when Australia takes on England in the fourth Ashes test starting on Thursday. Will Swanton from The Australian. Michael Clarke, should he stay or go?
Well, he should stay for the remainder of the Ashes. There's no one. I mean, you've got Sean Marsh coming in for Voges. There's no other spare batsman on the tour, so he's got to stay. You can't punt the captain halfway through. That would turn a side that is already resembling a bit of a, you know, disjointed, unorganised rabble into something far worse, mate. If they somehow win the Ashes, Michael will play another summer in Australia, and I think you'd expect him to pull the pin at the SCG. If they lose the Ashes, mate, I'm quite sure this will be Michael's last couple of tests.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? It always ends in tears, don't you reckon, Will? Rarely does it end well.
But mate, the whole feeling of instability in the team is extraordinary, really. And there is, I mean, Shane Watson had to go, that was fair enough. The whole Brad Haddon thing, I find that an extraordinary decision. Anyone who knows kind of, you know, the inner workings of that team like you do, I know you've spoken to Haddon a few times, and he's just such a highly regarded character among the rest of that group. The reason he sat out the test, we all know, was for, you know, good heartfelt personal reasons, and then for him to be given the flick like he was, it's obviously gone down poorly. And I mean, the fact that Brad Haddon's probably played his last test and for his career to have ended like it is, there's no more selfless player in that team than him. So that's a real stain on the side, I would thought.
Yeah, mixed messages really, Will. We've seen Darren Lehman come out in the last 24 hours or so and say, well, no, it was for form, but I don't know anyone who, and I know that Brad's down on form and he's only been averaging something like 15 or 16 over the past 12 months, but that form was still good enough in test match number one. And I've got no doubt he still would have been playing at Lourdes if it wasn't for the sickness within the family.
Oh, for sure, mate, for sure.
So why do they then come out and try and just say, you know, what are they, I don't know why they try and sugarcoat it.
No, same here. And mate, another big loser from that is Michael Clarke himself. And that had, I mean, Clarke's two biggest kind of on-field sidekicks were his keeper and his first slip, Haddon and Shane Watson. So they're both gone, and that kind of, it's the first time I've seen Michael look a bit lost in the field. And there was a decent line from Gideon Haig in the paper about how, you know, it wasn't immediately clear who Clarke's inner circle was, and in times like this, he needs people to, you know, to bounce ideas off and things like that. And they've taken two of his more senior guys away. So, I mean, it all feels a bit lost at the moment, but it felt that way for England before the last test, and that turned around. So who knows?
Well, were expectations too high leading into this Ashes series? You know, it just seemed like a fait accompli that we were going to wrap, you know.
Have you seen England play?
No, exactly. I know, but, you know.
They were rubbish.
Yeah, I know, but if you've seen the way Australia's played.
Well, the moving ball.
That's the concern for me. I know, everyone keeps talking about the moving ball, but it still doesn't make you, you know, stick a bat out at ball that's a foot off stump and, you know, and nick it to second slip.
Like, been
there's
poor
been
shots.
Some really rash decision-making from the batsmen, and the bowling's been very wayward. Yeah.
Guys, the great illusion was that West Indies tour. So, I don't know. I was on that tour, and I don't know how the Windies won that, squared the series with England. But because the Windies had gone right against the Poms, we thought the Poms and the Windies were a similar standard. Those two tests, which felt like warm-ups for the Ashes because of the cramped schedule, it was also squeezed together. There was a funny vibe on that tour, and that it seemed to me to be a team trying to operate in spite of itself and in spite of kind of knowing that there were a few chinks in there. Like, it was just a bit of a strange feeling around that squad. And there was, you know, Josh Hazlewood took a lot of wickets against the Windies, which was terrific, but it was all built up like, you know, Josh was going to be unplayable in England. Mitchell Starc, there was a thing about, you know, he'd become the best fast bowler in the world, all because of those two tests against the Windies. And there wasn't any kind of any really good hard form about any of those guys. It all still seemed a bit wishy-washy, to be honest. And the big uh, the big saving grace was going to be Ryan Harris coming back in, because you know what you're going to get out of him. Perhaps that's why they might go for Peter Siddle in this test, just to have a quick they can bank on. But yeah, when that West Indies tour, there did seem to be a few chinks, but they were just, you know, papered over a bit because the opposition was so poor.
They've stuck with this Adam Lyth, God knows how. Doesn't say much for all the other batsmen in all of the UK. Mark Wood, who missed that third test because of injury, Will, he looks like he'll come straight back in for Jimmy Anderson, who's a massive, massive loss and a bonus for us.
It is, for sure. It is, for sure. And it's just, you know, some cricket test series, they just have that, you know, a theme becomes set, I guess, and it seems to carry all the way through. And this one just seems to be that, you know, form goes out the window, and there can be huge fluctuations in an hour or two, which can swing a whole test match. So, you know, it's a bit cliched, I know, but, you know, the first couple of sessions again in England might set a tone for a match. But these short tests are a bit of a shame, I think. There's that, those long, hard, gritty, 5-day hard slog test matches, they seem to have gone out the window.
Well, but just very quickly, off topic, and before we get to the 7:30 news, you wrote Mick Fanning's book, did you not? Have you spoken to the great man? And what about him seeing another shark as soon as he went out there with the 60 Minutes camera crew?
Oh my god!
I mean, look, he's in a way, when he came back from going uppercut, right hook against the shark in South Africa, but he was a bit nonplussed because like all he basically did was not get eaten by a shark. And all this stuff about, you know, punching off the shark and everything, which is, you know, it's kind of right, but it's also kind of, I'm sure anyone who's had a shark in the vicinity, you know, tries to push it away to some extent. So that whole thing has been, but Mick is really kind of struggling with it, to be honest. He not many things faze Mick. There's been a few difficult chapters in his life on the personal level, but he kind of really is shaken by that. The ocean, you know, is his kind of sanctuary, and there's never been any drama for him out there. And now all of a sudden there's that bit of uncertainty for him. So, mate, it'll be fascinating. The next event starts in Tahiti in a couple of weeks. It'll be fascinating, actually, how he, you know, kind of backs up from what happened.
Very good, Will. Thanks very much. I'm sitting next to a shark right now. It's 7:30.
Thank you.